How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. And we have a lot of stuff to talk about today, tons of news to get into, including a preview of the WWE's Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which takes place moments after this show goes off the air, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. We're going to be talking about all of the matches up and down the show. There's two Money in the Bank ladder matches. There is a World Championship match. There's a WWE title match on the show. And there are going to be a few surprises as well. And then, in the second hour of this program, we are going to take your phone calls, your predictions on who you think is going to win all of these matches, including the main events, whether anybody is going to cash in the Money in the Bank title. Last year, about this time, I did a call-in show asking people for their predictions for Money in the Bank, since it was the big CM Punk final day in the company gimmick, which of course lasted a whole 0 days. He was back on Raw the next night. A lot more interest last year than this year, but still a lot of people trying to figure out what they're going to do this year, and there are a lot of different ideas, and there are a lot of surprises. We're going to talk about that later on in this program. We've also got news on Strikeforce. There was an event last night in Portland, Oregon. We'll tell you a little bit about that. Destination X was last Sunday. We talked about the show, previewed the show last Sunday, and ended up being another excellent show. Three in a row for TNA on pay-per-view, and there is a new TNA heavyweight champion in the form of Austin Aries. We're going to talk about his win, all of the matches on the show from last Sunday, and how that plays into not only the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view, which is coming up in August, but the Bound for Glory series, the Bound for Glory tournament, and the Bound for Glory pay-per-view, which is coming up in October. Also, UFC in Calgary takes place this coming Saturday night. We're going to talk about that. Plus, Big Dave Batista is having his first MMA fight ever. That is coming up as well. And a ton of other news. We got so much stuff to talk about today. So, back in just a moment after our first commercial break to kick it off, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of news to talk about today. Some pro wrestling, some mixed martial arts, some previews. Your phone calls in hour two. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm a little bit tired, and my eyes are very strained from trying to watch everything yesterday, but I think I'm doing okay.
You watched four boxing main events yesterday, as well as Strikeforce in Portland.
Yeah, and I tell you, it's the Strikeforce show on Thursday, I think it was Friday, they had the press conference, maybe it was Thursday, they had a press conference where I think there were like three reporters. There were about 37 people from Zuffa there. The fighters were there, and they were just could not have been any, you know, felt any worse about everything. The promotion leading into the main event of the Marine against the Surfer didn't do much for anybody involved, and they weren't exactly thrilled about that either. And I tell you, it's not like the show was awful. It was actually a fun show to watch in a lot of ways, some interesting things on there, but odds are, from the feedback we've gotten on the site, there's nobody that watched this. So I've been a proponent of keeping Strikeforce around, and I know with Showtime they have contractual issues where they just can't dump it or anything like that, and I like the idea because at least we'd have women's fighting, and you know, it could break some people, and maybe some Ultimate Fighter people could go to Strikeforce and get a little bit more time in or something like that. But also, being a proponent of the amount of shows that they're running, I just don't think they have them structured properly. I think at some point you've got to get rid of Strikeforce, because last night was a great example of nobody caring.
You know, I thought that Nate Marquardt and Tyrone Woodley had the potential to be the absolute worst fight of all time, and it ended up being the best fight on the show. And a show where, with the exception of Marquardt and Woodley, every single fight went to decision. and it was fine. It wasn't like a horrible show or anything like that. But waking up this morning and looking at the absolute lack of feedback, I mean, no feedback whatsoever to this show. It's like, there ain't much to say about it except that Nate Marquardt is the new 170-pound champion. He dropped down. He went off testosterone replacement therapy, which supposedly when you go on, you need for medical reasons and you need for life. But somehow he went off it and he dropped weight, looked great, fought better. Funny how that works. But he beat Tyrone Woodley via TKO, just absolutely destroyed this dude, and looked great. That was the best thing on the show. And then in the main event, Tim Kennedy did not, in fact, beat Luke Rockhold. Rockhold beat him via decision, and the fight was fine. I didn't come out of it thinking, man, they got something there in that Luke Rockhold. It was like, he's a fighter. He was better than Tim Kennedy. Nobody cared. And kind of sad, really. Sad in a lot of ways. I mean, I know that Dana White doesn't want to promote women's fighting. And since that's the case, then thank God there's a Strikeforce so that we can see women fighting. But I think that with Ronda Rousey on the cover of the body issue of ESPN magazine, I think that she has now kind of become a big enough star that Strikeforce should just be abolished and you should put a woman's fight here and there on pay-per-views. It's not like they have so much talent that these pay-per-views are stacked and there's no room for a women's fight. If you took your average pay-per-view and you put Ronda Rousey on it, I don't know. I think she'd be a bigger star than probably three of the pay-per-view match participants. Like first, second, and third fights on the card, she'd probably be a bigger star than anybody in those matches. You know, maybe not the semi-main, and probably the main event stars are a lot bigger stars than Ronda Rousey. Based on the show, actually. The Jose Aldo-Eric Koch fight, if that would have taken place, I think Rousey would have been a bigger star. In fact, I guarantee she's a bigger star than Eric Koch. But regardless, sad to see a lot of these fighters that are just, they work so hard, and here they are down in Portland. There are no reporters there. There's no support from Dana White. They're caught in the crossfire of Dana White and Showtime, and it's just too bad. But that's the way things are going to be for the time being, so I don't know what you do about it.
Yeah, not a whole lot you can do about it, except for, I mean, I don't know. I guess they're having trouble right now with Gilbert Melendez. Showtime doesn't want him anywhere near the UFC and wants him to get that last fight in and everything, and they're talking about doing him and Josh Thompson again for the fourth time, which, you know, yeah, okay.
Melendez versus Thompson?
Yes.
That's actually not going to happen. Apparently,
okay, thank God.
I think that was Josh Thompson going into business for himself because they asked Coker last night and he said that fight will not be taking place.
Yeah, you know, but if you think about it, though, then, you know, they're talking about doing Rockhold and maybe Souza or off his performance last night, Larkin. Do you want to see any of those fights? I mean, it's like the women's fight, WEC was the same way where it was like, God, imagine if some of these guys would be on like UFC pay-per-view undercards to provide excitement and stuff like that. And then it ended up happening, and it's been good for the UFC. Same thing when it comes to women's fighting. And it same thing when it comes to these guys, too. I mean, is Luke Rockhold going to get any better fighting Jacare Souza? Or, you know, it's just how many fights can you possibly make in Strikeforce before, you know, that are going to be functional TV? I mean, as that show's going on last night, over on HBO, Amir Khan and Danny Garcia are having, you know, what basically turned out to be a war. It was an all-action fight, and Khan, you know, winning the fight early, and then Garcia figuring him out and counterpunching him and scoring a big knockout. So, you know, with one flick of the remote, I'd be interested to see, and I don't know how it works with Showtime, if you can actually get numbers as far as segment breakdowns and things like that. I wonder how many people, even when they flipped it on, didn't turn away just because there's nothing riveting or anything like that that makes you want to stay with Strikeforce. And again, it's disappointing for everybody involved.
We've got UFC in Calgary this coming Saturday night, and Uriah Faber and Henan Barao is the main event. It is, I haven't actually gone back to look at the stats, but Dana believes that this is the single most cursed event in the history of UFC. There have been more changes due to injuries and replacements and farming out of talent on this show than any other show they have ever ran. And as far as the main event is concerned, this is probably the biggest fight in Uriah Faber's career, And I know some people are going to find that to be kind of a ridiculous statement, but some of his biggest fights were on events that not a lot of people watched. And he is now part of the UFC, and he is now on the big stage, and he's had some fights before, but this fight here, if he does not beat Hennen Burrell, I don't know if he ever gets another title shot again. And I know ever is a long time, but he's, I believe, 33 years old at this point, and he's gotten, I don't even know how many title shots in the last few years, probably about 5-6. And if he does not beat Hennen Burrell, then it's going to be, I would think, that based on the number of title shots he's had and the number that he has come up short in, if he doesn't win this fight, I don't think he's going to get a title shot anytime in the foreseeable future. So this is a big, big, big fight for Faber.
Well, even more than that, too, and it's not to discount Hennen Burrell because he can easily win this fight, but Faber, if he doesn't win this fight, then how long does he want to continue on to do this? Because even if he's not in title matches, he's a value to the UFC, having him on TV. The fact he can be, you know, he is somewhat of a crossover star. Women like him, guys like him. He's marketable. He's well-spoken, the whole nine yards. But the curse of having that is the fact that if he doesn't win this fight and goes, I can just continue to train guys and be a personality and do some other things, that's a bigger loss to the UFC than anything. So you're kind of in a catch-22 because Hennen Burrell is an exciting fighter that puts on fun fights, and to see him in a title match won't hurt my feelings whatsoever. But then, you know, if Faber doesn't win this fight, you can lose all the way around.
As of, I guess, today, Hennen Burrell is a heavy favorite, minus 185 to plus 160 for Uriah Faber. So, I don't know. Faber is a great fighter, and he's lost to top competition. All of his losses, top competition. And Burrell, I mean, he's got a really long win streak, but it's outside of UFC. And whenever guys have outside of UFC long win streaks, I don't really know how much credit to give those win streaks. We're going to talk about this more after the break, get into pro wrestling as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking the upcoming UFC 148 show in Calgary, 149, I'm sorry, in Calgary, taking place this Saturday night. Hennen Burrell, Uriah Faber in the main event. As noted before the break, Hennen Burrell is a heavy favorite over Faber. And as I was talking about, I can't tell you the number of guys I've seen that have had long win streaks or looked very impressive outside of UFC, and they come into UFC and all of a sudden not so impressive. I don't know if that's going to be the case with Hennen Burrell. Obviously, the odds makers think that that is not going to be the case, that he's going to beat Uriah Faber. What are your thoughts as far as that fight and those numbers? Are the odds too long in that fight, or looking at the way the guys match up, is that a solid line?
I think it's a pretty solid line because I didn't pay attention to it much, but you look at the Weidman-Munoz line, and it was kind of the same thing. Where, you know, Munoz has been, and obviously it's not been exactly the same as Faber, where he's had, you know, he's had losses against some lesser guys and has had times to not look good. But Weidman was the guy who was, you know, on the big uprise. He's, you know, the young rising star, and he ended up being a pretty good favorite, I think, going into that fight with Munoz, if I recall correctly, unless some late betting came in on Munoz to move it back down again. But it's kind of the same thing here with Burrell, where it's just like, you know, the people had a chance to see him when he went into WEC and he beat Cole Escovedo and Brad Pickett, which, you know, he was supposed to do. But what really made everybody happy and excited about him was beating Scott Jorgensen so clearly in the way that he did earlier on this year at UFC 143 that, you know, Jorgensen is a good wrestler, very explosive, I mean, a dangerous fighter. And, you know, Burrell handled him, and when everything kind of fell out with Faber and Aldo, you know, to to make the move to have Faber and Barral, I mean, it was not, you know, again, it's not frying pan into the fire, but it's an incredibly tough fight for Faber where all the pressure's on him. Because, you know, Barral, I don't think it matters if he loses this fight or anything. It's going to hurt him a little bit, but as long as he looks semi-impressive, you know, he should continue on the same path that he's on now. And it's, you know, again, he's been around for a long time, too. He was in Shooto, Brazil, in 2004 or 2005, something like that. So, you know, but the loss isn't going to kill him, so all the pressure's on Faber. And, again, it's a really tough fight, and as good as Faber is, as good as his wrestling is, I'm kind of more apt to lean to Barral right now, too. I might change my mind during the week, but I'm thinking Barral wins this fight. I don't think he'll finish him, because there's one thing about Faber is just, you know, he does, people forget that he is a amateur wrestler with that mentality, and as much of a pretty boy as he is, and as, you know, bad as his hands can be sometimes, and as brittle as they can be sometimes, he is still a wrestler. So I think it's actually a decision. It may be a one-sided one, but that's how I'm going with Barral right now.
All right, we've got a recap here of the TNA Destination X pay-per-view. There is a new TNA World Heavyweight Champion. Austin Aries did, in fact, beat Bobby Roode clean in the middle with a brainbuster in the main event of last Sunday's show. Also on the show, we had a Falls Count Anywhere match with AJ and Daniels, which was awesome. They had a great brawl. And Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe is very good as well. The undercard, a lot of X Division matches with, indie wrestlers. And it was okay. Some were all right, some were not. And now we are leading into, I guess, the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view with another Austin Aries, Bobby Roode match. And we've got 3 months until Bound for Glory. So we've got a September show as well before the October pay-per-view. And first off, Mike, your thoughts on Destination X last week?
I was really happy with it, and I know there were people that were, you know, when they brought in the guys who have been trying to get into the X Division tournament, you know, outsiders and things like that, you know, at the beginning of the show, it was a tale of two halves, and the second half of the show carried the whole thing. The first half wasn't all that spectacular when you had the same X Division guys in with each other that were having issues with each other because they were unfamiliar. But really, I think it actually turned out to be okay because it allowed you time to build up, and they didn't, you know, have a whole lot of action to burn you out at the end. And the show, whether it meant to or not, actually built well because those X Division matches were not the most fantastic things in the world. Because the second half of the show was fantastic. I mean, it was AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels have wrestled a zillion times. But they, you know, put a new spin on it in the last man standing match, and that was a great match. Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle was really good. I mean, the main event was, and I was not a fan of taking the belt off of Roode. I figured, you know, wait for Storm. This is what you've been building to. But much like the Abyss situation, which with Joseph Park, which they've changed on the fly, much like the feud with Daniels and Styles and Kazarian, which they've seemed to change on the fly as well, you might as well go with the hot hand, and you might as well have Aries, because if you're going this well, you'll be able to figure out a way to get James Storm and Bobby Roode back into it together later on in the year and make it count where it means something for James Storm. And with what they've been doing with storylines, I have the confidence they're going to do that. So you know what? Good. You know, it sets off the new style of how they're going to run Destination X with, you know, the Cruiser or the X Division champion offering to give up his belt to go on for the main event. You know, he won it. That's the perfect way to debut it. And you know what? You might as well go with a hot hand because Austin Aries is more than carrying his weight.
If you were in charge, actually, it's interesting. I'll ask a question in a moment. Austin Aries is super over after winning the title. And I guess the question will now be like a two-part question. First part is, if you're in charge and the match had not happened yet, this is prior to Destination X, what would have been your booking plan for Austin Aries as far as when he won and lost the title? And second part of the question, if you look at the reaction that he got on Impact Thursday after winning the title, does that change your idea of what you should do with him?
Second part first, yeah, actually it does. I think you just continue on and roll with this because the most important thing when James Storm gets back at the end of the day is that he gets his revenge on Bobby Roode. I think the title can actually come to be secondary because all of the longtime TNA fans will realize that, yeah, even though it's not for the title, even though in a perfect wrestling world that should be, you know, how he goes out and gets it, the end of the day is he needs to get his revenge on Bobby Roode. So it doesn't really matter, I think, if the title's an issue there, because if Austin Aries is continuing to hold on to it or trading it back and forth with somebody else in another feud, which he can obviously carry, and there's a lot of guys in that company who he can have good matches with because of the way he works, I think, you know, you can go on with this for really until, you know, the fans and the ratings tell you not to, and the feeling tells you not to. You might as well keep rolling with Aries right now. Before the match, before I knew all this was going to happen, I'd say, okay, if he won the belt, have him lose it again at the next pay-per-view. Because, again, I was still, you know, that's still with the mentality that, or I'm sorry, lose it before Bound for Glory. At least in a long enough fashion where if Storm came back to win the belt from Bobby Roode, it did mean something. But you know what? You're cramped for time there, too. So I really, how everything kind of worked out, I think it's worked out for the best. And just, it's real simple. Just roll with Austin Aries right now and have him in feuds and feel him out and have him lose the belt when he needs to lose the belt. It's not to say it's that simple or anything like that, but you know, back in the day, the crowd and the TV ratings and everything else, that gave you the feeling when people were burned out and tired. They obviously love Austin Aries right now. They believe in him as a champion. Roll with it.
I think that you could do something where I think you should go with it for the time being. I mean, obviously, when he won the title, everybody went nuts and they're behind him. And it's not like it's not like anything is going to make a difference really in the ratings right now. So if it's something that the live crowd is behind and it's something different, it's something new, you may as well go with it.
Hey, and if he picks up any pay-per-view buys whatsoever, because at the end of the day, that's really all that matters for them.
Sure. But, I mean, let's think about this for a second. So let's say that you decide we're going to go with Aries as long as it appears to be working, and that means we have to make a change to the original Bound for Glory plan, which was Storm and Roode for the title. Part of me thinks they should do that anyway because let's just say that you have Aries beat Roode at Hardcore Justice and then lose to him in September. And then at the September pay-per-view, when Roode wins it back, you have Storm come in the ring and they have the big face-off for the big match at Bound for Glory. That's only a one-month build.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know, I think James Storm right now, if you look at the leaderboard, as of today, he's got 36 points, Joe has 37, Angle's got 27, Jeff Hardy's got 21. So those are your top four right there. So you could do a deal where James Storm is one match away from winning the whole thing, and somebody somehow screws him out of it. And let's just say that I think Kurt Angle's a babyface right now, but let's just say he turns heel, just for sake of argument, since they actually had a great match last year. You have Kurt Angle cost James Storm the deal. Maybe something happens and Storm, you know, he beats Kurt and puts him out of the running, so Kurt ends up screwing James Storm. And then you've at least got James Storm and Kurt Angle, who can have a great match at Bound for Glory. And James Storm does not have to win this tournament in order to get a shot at Bobby Roode. It doesn't have to happen that way. I mean, yeah, that was their plan, but you could do a deal where Storm and Angle feud for 2 or 3 months, and whoever wins the tournament can do his series with Austin Aries for a few months, and then Bobby Roode can beat Aries, like, I don't know, Genesis in January. And you got February and March and April to build up to Roode and Storm at Lockdown, 1 year after the last time that Roode beat Storm. So Storm's there in the cage, and this time he's got to not screw it up. So there's a lot of ways you can go with this, and we're kind of running out of time in this segment. But when we come back, if you've got the leaderboard in front of you, why don't you take a look at that and tell me who you would book Austin Aries against at Bound for Glory if he is going to remain the champion. Who would be the winner of the Bound for Glory series? We'll talk about that when we come back from the break, plus the WWE Money in the Bank pay-per-view. You're listening to the Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And WrestlingObserver.com is your place to go for all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. It is the number one combined pro wrestling MMA site in the world. So check it out. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play of Money in the Bank immediately after this show goes off the air. So if you want to know who beats who cashes in what if they do, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com for that. We'll also be doing a brand new radio show after the event tonight, myself and Dave Meltzer. We had a show last night for website subscribers as well. We'll have another one tomorrow after Raw. We do radio shows all the time, every single day, sometimes several times per day. I've had a couple of Thursdays where I've done five shows in a single day. So if you love this show, if you love Wrestling Observer Live and you only get to hear it once per week, you are missing out. Daily radio shows, and on top of that, every show that we have ever done is available in the archive if you sign up right now. So for $10.99, you can sign up for a month, go to the archives, and you can listen to shows from 2005, 2006, 2007, all the way up through today. Tens of thousands of hours of audio is in the archives right now. It's only $10.99 per month. So if you like to listen to radio in your car, if you like to listen to podcasts, if you like to listen to it in the gym, at work, if you love listening to wrestling audio, then if you don't sign up, I don't know what to tell you. You're not going to get enough, but you'll get more than enough if you sign up. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. If you scroll down the right-hand side of the page, there's a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Four, actually, including one with Joe Park Esquire of TNA Wrestling. Check them out, and if you like what you hear, sign up, and you won't regret it. I promise you, you will not regret it. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, looking at the leaderboard for Bound for Glory, if you made the decision to keep the belt on Austin Aries as opposed to putting it back on Rude in the next couple of months, who would you book as the winner of the Bound for Glory tournament for the main event at that pay-per-view?
Even though he's not in it, Joe Park.
Well,
I don't think I get enough Joe Park, but realistically,
actually, Joe Park's alter ego, or his brother, Abyss, fought for, I believe it's called the North American title down in AAA last night. He was facing L.A. Park, and unfortunately, he was unable to wrest the title from L.A. Park. So the Park family is, it's a sad day for them.
Kind of been a long, weird week for them, but actually, realistically, I like your idea. It's simple. Samoa Joe's had seven matches. He is, as it showed this week, he's either feast or famine. He wins by submission. He loses by submission. He's, you know, unless you're going to do something where he's now pissed off at himself and maybe he's upset that he's blown the thing and you're serious about doing something with him, James Storm overcoming him in good matches where it's big guys slamming into each other, I that may be a good idea, but realistically, Kurt Angle's the one to go with, I think. I think you get the best matches out of him. You don't hurt him in the time that you are waiting to build up to Rude. Nobody wants to boo Jeff Hardy. Nobody wants to boo Rob Van Dam. I personally don't want to see Mr. Anderson, and I don't know what the deal is with Magnus or De Niro, and it's not like they're going to win the thing anyway. But there's obviously something with them where, I mean, they reintroduced De Niro. If you're going to do something with him, that probably would have been a good time to do it. But they kind of reintroduce him by just having him stand there a couple weeks ago, like, hey, the Pope's in the back. Or actually, it may have even been on a pay-per-view where they returned in a battle royal or something like that. And it's been very quiet. Magnus is another one. I don't know exactly what his deal is, but you know, if they were, I think he and James Storm would actually be good too, and be a good little distraction for Storm. It wouldn't be all that major or anything, but it wouldn't hurt Storm either. And going over a guy like a Magnus, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So with your options so limited, I think you go with Angle because people can boo him, people can cheer him. The fans will do that with Kurt Angle on command because they all love and respect Kurt Angle. So that's where you're going to get your best matches, and it may be a good way to fill the void if you're not going to go the Samoa Joe route, which, again, would be a good one if you can make Joe serious and give people a reason to want to see James Storm overcome him.
It was, by the way, the AAA Latin American title.
The Latin American title.
That's right. Jeff Jarrett's down there. Karen Angle, or Karen Jarrett, is down there.
Do they Schmaz. Just have that title in Nicaragua and such?
I don't know. I mean, someday, I'm sure. I mean, they're looking to tour all over is the story. We'll talk to Dr. Lucha about that on the show later on this week.
See Argentina loving AAA.
Oh, yeah. Actually, they would probably adore AAA. Let's get into the Money in the Bank lineup. The show takes place this afternoon, everybody. So for those of you that are interested in finding out what the status is of the WWE and world titles, plus who Mr. Money in the Bank will be for both brands, you can check out the pay-per-view. It is airing from Phoenix, Arizona. We've got four matches on the card thus far. I would suspect they'll probably add a Ryback match to it. And I would expect that we might get some surprise returns in the WWE Raw version of the Money in the Bank match. Let's look at this card. The pre-show match on YouTube, for those of you that must see more pro wrestling, or you want to see a free match and don't want to buy the pay-per-view, it is Kofi Kingston and Truth against Unico and Camacho. What do you think about that match, Mike?
I think we're going to see some AW action. I would figure Titus O'Neil and Darren Young will come out, and or maybe they even, I don't know, maybe they even attack Truth. I don't know where it's at with his foot or whatever, but, you know, why Unico and Camacho would be getting this match if Abraham Washington has got the primetime players or whatever they are in the position to have a tag title shot, I mean, why is this taking place? I mean, I have no idea. But in any event, I see some sort of chicanery taking place, and maybe it's even a no contest at the end of the thing.
We have got two Money in the Bank matches. The first of them on the Raw side. It's very interesting because the SmackDown Money in the Bank ladder match has eight participants, and the Raw side has four. I would strongly suspect that you're going to get some additions to the Raw side. Now, last night on Observer Radio, I threw out the idea of Rock coming back and winning the briefcase in that match. And obviously, if you're going to have a surprise return, I am all for having surprises on pay-per-views. You don't want to do it every single time, but every now and then, you should send a message to the people that skipped the pay-per-view that, you know what? You should never skip pay-per-views because you never know when, for example, The Rock might return. But a guy that is as big a star as The Rock, you don't want to use for a surprise because you're pretty much throwing money, well, apropos, Money in the Bank down the tubes. So, I think that it is far more likely that we will see the return of a lesser star in that match. I threw out the name Rey Mysterio on the show last night. It is a match where only former WWE champions can be involved, so that would include The Miz, who I think there's a strong possibility will end up in the match tonight. And somebody suggested Mick Foley, which I suppose is a possibility as well, but I don't know about the idea of Foley doing a match like this because he's a guy that I feel can't really reel himself back in, and he should not be falling off ladders and going through tables and getting hit with stuff at his age and his condition. So I hope we don't see Mick Foley in this match, but I think the most likely scenarios are the return of Rey and the return of The Miz. Rounding this out to six participants with Big Show, Kane, Chris Jericho, and John Cena. Obviously, the storyline here is that John Cena has promised to win the Money in the Bank briefcase. And if he does, that would pretty much put him out of the running of appearing in the main event of CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and cashing in. That makes absolutely no sense. So looking at those two matches, Mike, what is your prediction for the Raw Money in the Bank and the WWE Championship match on the Raw side?
Well, I think you're right. It's going to be Rey Mysterio and The Miz. The Miz has had experience in these matches. Obviously, Rey comes back and can be someone who can take a couple more bumps. Mick Foley is to me an afterthought to them. I'm actually going to go with Kane winning it. I don't know what's going on with Daniel Bryan or AJ or any of that stuff that's been going on. It's amazing. Watch two shows from WWE every week, and I still forgot that this pay per view was coming up. It's such a weird put together, just a lot logistically doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I'll go with Kane winning the match because I just see John Cena and something else in a main event after this, even at the pay-per-view where Kane cashes in his Money in the Bank match.
a finish that actually makes sense is for AJ to call it down the middle in the Punk Daniel Bryan match. They have a great match. Somebody wins. And then, boom, the fire goes off. Kane comes down. Maybe Kane hits a choke slam on whoever wins and the guy kicks out. And it looks like someone's actually not going to successfully cash in their briefcase. And then AJ with the low blow, Kane hits another choke slam, gets the pin, and Kane and AJ leave together. That would actually make sense. The two reasons I don't think that's going to happen is I think it makes too much sense for WWE, if that makes any sense. And the bigger issue is that John Cena on Monday promised that he was going to leave with the title. And when babyfaces make a promise, or when they swear to God, it always comes true. So I figure that most likely John Cena is going to be Mr. Money in the Bank. And that'll be an interesting one. I'm not a big advocate of it, because it's not like we need to wait to see John Cena get another championship match. And as he's noted many times on television, championships come and championships go. So he doesn't care.
It means so much to him.
Yes. But it's interesting because Money in the Bank is traditionally a way for a man to backdoor into a title. So the only thing I can figure is if he wins, he's going to do a deal where he says, I vow to cash this in at WrestleMania. And I don't know. My idea with The Rock was, you know, if you were going to do this with The Rock, he would win and then announce on the 1,000th Raw that he was going to wait till WrestleMania to cash it in. But you can do the same thing with John Cena. I don't know. I don't know who he's going to face. If he's going to face Rock, does that mean Rock has to win the championship around Royal Rumble? I don't know, but
well, guys have lost the Money in the Bank briefcase before in matches. They've put it up. I mean, didn't Kennedy win it? And then I forget who he dropped it to at the time he was injured and the Signature Pharmacy thing was going on the whole nine yards. So
I think he dropped
it to
Edge.
There's a way to get out of it if they so choose to. You know, on the SmackDown side, I wonder, you know, they always love bringing up the fact that everybody that's cashed it in has always won. With how they treat Dolph Ziggler, I can see actually Dolph Ziggler being the first guy to win the Money in the Bank and then not be able to cash it in somehow. And I tend to lean to him in this over Cody Rhodes as far as the SmackDown one.
I can see what you're saying, but to me, I think that the first guy that fails, in order to not just make that guy a geek for life, the first guy that fails has to be like CM Punk. Somebody who has won it. I believe he's won it twice and cashed it in successfully twice. You got to find a guy who has won it and cashed it in successfully, and he ends up winning it again, or maybe even in Punk's case, a third time. And third time, not the charm. He fails. So at least he kind of goes down in history as the guy that cashed it in and didn't win it. But at the same time, you're not killing the guy because he's a guy that won it twice and cashed in successfully two times. So I think that's the kind of guy you have to use for the first guy to fail. I think if Ziggler fails, it's just like, man, you're done with that guy forever. And I know how they treat him, but I don't think that's what they want out of him. So we'll talk about the SmackDown Money in the Bank ladder match when we come back from the break. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here talking about the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which takes place immediately after the show goes off the air. We'll be doing live running play-by-play over at WrestlingObserver.com. If you want to follow along without buying the pay-per-view, or perhaps you're buying the pay-per-view and you want to get Dave Meltzer's thoughts on the show, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. And Mike, is your prediction for the SmackDown Money in the Bank match that Dolph Ziggler is going to win?
Yeah, actually it is. We'll go with Dolph Ziggler. You know, you go, okay, it's not going to be Tyson Kidd. It's not going to be Sin Cara. You know, you can see an outside shot that Damian Sandow does it, but if that's the case, again, like you said, it's got to be somebody bigger than the stipulation that loses in that first one. So, you know, you don't want it to be Sandow. Christian, you know, I could see it being Christian, and if you get Christian-Daniel Bryan matches, that wouldn't necessarily hurt my feelings. But I think logically it's not going to be Tenfire Santino, so that leaves Cody and Dolph. And You know, I would love to see Cody do it and actually somehow win the title later on down the line, and they create something with Cody Rhodes or at least try to run with him. But frankly, I've been saying that about Dolph Ziggler now for a while, and I think he's more feast or famine as far as where he's going to go than Cody is because of how he's been treated. And if you're not just going to take him for granted as a bump machine and be a guy that you know is going to be a serviceable hand that goes out there, and you think, you know, and they need stars. So if you think you got anything in Dolph Ziggler, I mean, now really is the time to do it. So, and this is the match to do it in as far as being able to bounce around like a Super Bowl and then still come out and overcome and win Money in the Bank. I think this would be a really good time to do it.
I think that Cody and Dolph are the obvious two potential winners of that match. But for some reason, I can just see them putting it on Sandow as well. I just see it as like them back there going, who's a guy that nobody's going to expect? Let's put it on Sandow. And I don't know. I mean, realistically, I don't see it happening, but I could see it potentially happening. I guess that's the best way to put it. All right. We're going to head to our hourly break. When we come back with hour two, we're going to take your phone calls, your predictions for Money in the Bank. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every Sunday afternoon by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which happens to take place moments after this show goes off the air, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. We're going to try something new here in the second hour, something we haven't tried before. We're going to take some phone calls, get your predictions on the event, who you think is going to win the top matches, and that sort of deal. You can always head to WrestlingObserver.com to find out when we're going to be taking phone calls. And in fact, the easiest way to find out is to follow me on Twitter. At Brian Alvarez is the place to go. Sign up. Check me out on Twitter. Set it up so that the updates go to your telephone, your cell phone. And I will always tweet when it is time to take phone calls. And you can head up to WrestlingObserver.com, get all the phone numbers and that sort of thing, or put the phone numbers into your phone. And you are welcome to call in and discuss anything you'd like. Or if we've got a topic of the day, such as the topic today, you are welcome to call in to discuss that as well. So we're going to be doing that usually on Mondays and Fridays at WrestlingObserver.com. And if you're a subscriber, you can download the show and keep it forever. So check that out. We are talking Money in the Bank. And we've pretty much been previewing the entire event, and we've got a couple of extra matches here that we haven't talked about yet. So, Mike, before the break, a quick prediction for the world title match with Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio.
You know, it's disappointing because I really like Alberto Del Rio, and he's been looking like he was going to get the title for, God, it feels like 18 months now, however long it's been, where it looks like he's going to get the title and doesn't, and back and forth. But I just don't see. I think this could be a surprising match for a lot of people who maybe are you know, looking past it or not caring much about it in the way it's been built up. But Sheamus and Del Rio, I think, could actually be a good hard hitting matchup. But I would not take the belt off Sheamus right now. I think, you know, it's
actually, hold on, we got to head to a break. We'll talk about this more when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here at Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And we had forgotten that we were in a short segment there. And Mike was in the middle of discussing Alberto Del Rio and Sheamus when I had to rudely cut him off. Mike, you are welcome to continue your prediction for the match tonight.
Ranting there, but yes, Sheamus, I think he should win, actually. I think he's been, you know, doing well with the belt. The match with Tensai was kind of underrated on Raw a couple weeks ago as far as being a good hard-hitting contest. And for the most part, he's, you know, you take Orton and Cena out of the mix, you know, people react to Sheamus, you know, probably the best out of almost anybody else, and they stick with him throughout the match, too. It's not just a pop when he comes out and at the end of his matches, so As much as I'd like to see Del Rio in the mix and continue on in the mix as a champion, I just wouldn't take the belt off Sheamus right now.
All right, we're going to go to the phones here. Let's see how this works. This is a first-time experiment here on the show, so here we go. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, my name is Luke. I'm calling you from Toronto.
Luke, what's going on?
Not so much. Just wanted to quickly talk to you about Mr. Dean Ambrose. I've been hearing a lot and reading a lot on the internet about potentially them introducing him through the AJ angle. I just wanted to know if you'd heard anything from the company, if this is maybe where they're going with this angle.
I have not heard anybody bring up Dean Ambrose involved in the AJ storyline, but that doesn't mean that's not going to happen. I don't know. Mike, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, Dean Ambrose is a great character.
He's ready, too. That's one thing with him. He's actually ready.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He's ready for television, in my mind.
He's probably more ready than anybody else in developmental. And actually, I think he'd be a pretty darn good fit with AJ. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, he probably would be, but they've been so hesitant on bringing him up, and they're trying to look for the right thing to bring him up. I still think an idea with him or a Foley or a Regal or somebody like there to maximize the impact, because he doesn't look like, you know, what WWE usually produces, and he doesn't sound like what the... I mean, it's been a long time. Roddy Piper's been a caricature of himself for so long now, and that's what he mostly gets compared to, because it's the psychological part, it's the mouth. I think they need to introduce him in a safer way for him to get the most maximum impact he can, and I just... Being a part of it, this has been kind of a sideshow with AJ, and again, you could see how you could, you know, wean him, you know, put him into it for it to make sense. But I just don't think it's really the best idea to go with to really debut him.
So
I was just going to say as well. I mean, the fact that they're holding off on him, I kind of saw that just from my standpoint. You know, he's not on the new NXT. They left him off of that. He's one of the guys who's been on the road now for many months with the company. And I just wondered if the fact that they're leaving him off could mean that they have bigger plans for him than, say, all these other guys.
Well, I mean, they certainly have. I wouldn't say they have bigger plans for him right now, but I think they see more upside in him than a lot of the other guys. So they don't want to screw it up by debuting him and, well, I guess kind of turning him into a Damian Sandow, where he's a guy on SmackDown and people know who he is, but nobody cares. So I think they're trying to avoid that. And would you debut him today at the pay-per-view? Or are you thinking that you do what you do at the pay-per-view and then debut him like on Raw or at Raw 1000 or something like that?
Well, the thing for me and what makes him kind of interesting, I actually watched a lot of just the handheld, you know, videos from people's phones of the house shows. And it's cool because you see him coming down to the ring. You see everybody like, who's this guy? Like you do with most people. Oh, who is this job guy? By the time he makes it to the ring, it's almost like he's already gotten over. Like the people are like, wait, who's this guy? Oh, my God, this guy seems like he's drunk or this guy seems crazy. They're talking about him. You know what I mean? He's a guy who can make an impression very fast. And I just think when you do bring him in, the guys that seem to be most supportive of him behind the scenes have been the guys like Punk, who has openly called him, I think, the secret weapon. Guys like Daniel Bryan, these are the two guys I would have him in a program with working if I just wanted to see, you know, match-wise, that seems to be what would blend the best. So I don't know. I would debut him tonight, actually, and I know a lot of people think that's a big risk because he's a virtual unknown. But again, I think this guy can get over on camera just by being what he is, which is clearly something very different than anyone else in the company.
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call. I like the idea. I'd have to think of a way to involve him if you were going to put it tonight, but I think that would lead to some good matches. That would lead to some great promos. It's too bad they don't have like a mystery slot in the Raw Money in the Bank side. Although they've already made the deal that it has to be a world champion, so it really wouldn't work. But it's a good idea. Let's head back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
This is Eric from St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Eric, what's up?
I was wondering, what do you think the chances are on Chris Jericho winning the Money in the Bank and leaving for a while with Fozzy and randomly coming back and cashing in the Money in the Bank contract?
I think there is a decent chance of him winning, but I don't think he's leaving in the sense that I think he's... Here's the deal. Chris Jericho is booked for SummerSlam. And I know that he's got a tour that is about to take place, but if he's booked for SummerSlam, if he's got that Sunday off to do SummerSlam, then to me it doesn't make any sense for him to not be on television leading up to SummerSlam. So I think he's going to make most, if not all, of the Raw shows, not do any house show events or anything like that, but at least make Raw, go back on tour, and be back in time for SummerSlam. So I think if you put the belt on him, I don't think he would have to even leave. I think you could still kind of build storylines around him, although you would not have Mr. Money in the Bank at the house shows, and I'm not sure if that's something they'd want to do. So my guess is that Jericho doesn't win, but I suppose it's possible. Any thoughts, Mike?
Just the thing of, I don't think it would matter. As long as you have the other Money in the Bank winner on those shows or on the shows in general, because, again, the four guys that are currently in that match tonight, you know, save from adding anybody, none of them need Money in the Bank. They're only there. They needed to come up with a concept to, and it was, okay, only former champions can be in this one to try to tie things together, but I don't think it would matter if he did win it, but I just don't think that he will.
Anything else, caller?
With Jericho on tour with the Fozzy and the city coming out soon, do you think he's going to be gone? I know you kind of mentioned it before, but do you think he's really going to take much if he needs time off?
I want to thank you very much for the call. I think he's going to take some time off from the Raw show, but as far as taking time off from anything else, I mean, I'm sorry, take time off from house shows, but not take any time off from Raw. So I think if you're expecting to see him at your local event, you're probably out of luck until after the tour is over. But if you've bought tickets for Raw, I think there's a good chance you'll see him there. So there you go. By the way, Mike, Alberto Del Rio is on the cover, or he's on the poster for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. I don't know if that means anything, but as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, there was an incident where Alberto Del Rio got really mad and he wanted to quit. And this was around the time that he was scheduled to get his match at the last pay-per-view, and he missed it due to what they claimed was a concussion. And I'm thinking there's at least a possibility that in order to calm him down, they said, fine, you can have the championship at Money in the Bank for the time being.
And you know what? It wouldn't hurt my feelings if that ends up being the case. I mean, that's completely fine with me. He's already won the thing once. And then, you know, so it just, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how over he is either. But, I like Del Rio a lot. I think there's a lot you can do with him that they haven't done. They seem to be high on Roberto Rodriguez, which, you know, they're not usually they always try to pull away from debuting somebody with a guy, and then they always try to take the manager guy away or force him to wrestle or something like that. But, you know, them together in a unit is incredibly entertaining. So if they do go ahead and go with that, that won't hurt my feelings whatsoever.
All right, let's head back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Patrick Michael in Rochester, New York.
Patrick, what's up?
Hey, not too bad. Yeah, I just want to ask both of you guys, especially since Mike is there, what do you see the future as far as All Japan Pro Wrestling? Do you think with the quality of the product being so good, is it kind of stuck like in a TNA situation where they're too small to be big now?
No, I think it's just as long as they have money coming in, I think they're going to float at the same pace. It's just the industry's not on enough of a pickup where they can even fit into the TNA category. As long as Keiji Muto is the driving force behind that company as far as putting things together and being able to pimp himself out, because he's one of the few guys in any company over there that's got legitimate crossover appeal from years and years and has got his hands in different pockets all over the
place. Actually, Mike, hold on 1 second, and Patrick, hold on as well. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 40 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We have Patrick here on the line, who was talking to Mike about All Japan. And Mike, sorry I had to cut you off so abruptly, but go ahead and continue.
No time cues today, but as long as Keiji Muto, again, is in the, you know, a driving force position to actually do stuff and keep them going and keep them keep money coming in, that's as far as they're going to go. They've been able to create some relatively new stars. They've gotten lucky in some ways. I mean, the Ryoto Hama experiment with Akebono, I mean, that took off, you know, far better than it really, you know, anybody should have. And, you know, with guys like Soya, and there's been a lot of other guys they've been able to, you know, develop. As long as they're in place, they're going to be okay. It's just that I don't think they're going to be able to pick up any momentum. If New Japan's not really doing it, and Dragon Gate, and they are a little bit on the upswing over there, but realistically, you know, All Japan with money going tomorrow, or Keiji Muto going tomorrow, their prospects just don't look as good. So I think they can continue to stay around as long as they continue to work with everybody, and again, working with New Japan being the biggest thing.
Yeah, as I say, it's been the Japanese scene has been great, especially, I mean, I'm looking forward to G1 Climax for the first time in a couple of years. But it just seems like it's kind of like in a doldrum. I mean, except for Noah, I mean, everybody seems to be kind of, you know, either catching on fire or, you know, have been on fire now for the last probably 6 to 12, 18 months.
And it's just kind of frustrating. Well, yeah, so you get down to the Observer Awards at the end of the year, and there's going to be some people going, who are Sekimoto and Okabayashi? But if you've had a chance to actually see that tag team, they are legitimately the best tag team in the world. And again, there's All Japan doing a very good job putting themselves in a good position, because feuding with Big Japan and having, you know, that interaction has led to some really great matches. And again, Sekimoto and Okabayashi, Sekimoto could be a star in New Japan right now. He could be, you know, a player wherever he would want to go. So being able to take advantage of that and bringing in the right outsiders at the right times and giving them functional storylines has really helped themselves out. I mean, even Kenzo Suzuki hasn't been able to bring anything down.
Yeah. Well, guys, keep up a great job on the site. Everybody should subscribe. I love it, and have a great day.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Patrick. Really appreciate that. All right. We should talk a little bit about some other news as well. The UFC 148 buy rate, the Sonnen Silva show, is looking to be about 1 million buys. And I'd predicted about 1.1 million. The night of the show, I guess due to the amount of media that showed up and such, Dana White had predicted that it was going to break all records, including pay-per-view, which would have meant 1.6 million buys or more. And at the time, I thought, that's preposterous. 1.1 I can buy, 1.6, no chance. And in fact, there was no chance. It did break every other record that they have had outside of attendance internationally. They did break the U.S. record for Gate. Your thoughts on 1 million, is that a disappointment in the end?
No, I kind of frame mine off a boxing one. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but I was thinking like 1,050,000 buys. It'll be some odd number that they announce. It won't be a clean number, but that's really about right for all the upheaval they've been going through, for all the, you know, interest or lack of interest and promotion and this, that, and the other, and what's happened with the card. I mean, at the end of the day, it just proved that, you know, when you have two guys that everybody, you know, wants to see, you know, beat each other up, everything else be damned, you're going to get the buys for it if you don't completely screw it up. And they most certainly did not, even with all the headaches that they had. So can't complain at all about 1 million buys. And again, I'm not sure what's, you know, unless GSP is somehow able to come back by the end of the year, and that's not going to happen. This was the biggest event of the year, and all the way around they took advantage of it, even with all of the problems that they had and all the bitterness some fans had about things changing so much because of the amount of money that they paid.
I think that the key to the whole thing, why I feel my prediction failed, is that they didn't get the countdown special on Fox. And I think if they would have got that, I think they could have done 1.1 million. I still don't think there was any way they were getting 1.6. It's just, it's a different time. The company is not as hot as it was around UFC 100. UFC 100 was something that just exploded on its own. It was something that was actually fan-created. You know, when UFC 100 was coming, the idea within Zuffa was that it's UFC 100, that's kind of cool. Maybe we'll kind of make it like a something special, but it was the fans that that caught on and made that the biggest MMA event of all time. You had Brock Lesnar headlining against Frank Mir. I mean, it was a perfect storm that got you that one point.
They were floating it at their high water mark at that time, and you know that was a surprisingly impressive number. You know, if you knew it was going to be big, you didn't know it was going to be that big. And again, you know, when you look at those standards and you look at where they're at and the salvo, you know, just the shots that they've taken on the side with injuries and everything else, you know, since that fight has actually taken place, you know, the million by number still should be impressive to people.
Yeah, and I think that if they would have actually got a countdown special on Fox in a nice primetime slot, I think you could have bumped it up a little bit higher. And
absolutely.
Now, I don't know if we discussed this or not. Maybe we did. But what are your thoughts on the fact that, Fox passed on a half-hour countdown special that they could have put anywhere? I mean, it aired on FX at like 2 o'clock a.m., which that baffles me as well. I mean, really, there's no place you could have put a, half-hour countdown special for, this UFC show. I mean, I mean, they have a date for UFC on Fox 4, so they could have aired a million commercials during it for that event, but they chose to just pass on it outright, and it surprises me, and it seems like a bad omen, or not a bad omen, but kind of like a bad, makes you really wonder about the relationship, is the best way to put it.
Well, yeah, it didn't feel good, and, you know, again, they're so early into the whole thing, where, you know, you don't have to worry about being, you know, Fox being murdered off of there or anything like that. I mean, I really don't. They'll have a place for it somewhere, if not on Fox, on FX. But for both Fox and FX to pass on something that, yeah, it could have went out to affiliates at 2:30 in the morning, you know, it makes you think they never even considered it. They couldn't have looked at it. Because if you did look at it and you did have somebody presenting it going, look at what it did for Mayweather and De La Hoya. Look at what it did for this, or look at what it did for the very first fight on Fox when we had Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos. Look what it did for that.
Well, all of those things, just to I hate to cut you off, but all of those things were, for example, the 24/7. That aired on HBO, which led to an HBO-promoted pay-per-view event. The countdown to the first Fox show led to a show on Fox. I mean, Fox would have gotten nothing out of UFC 148. So from that perspective, it's like, okay, well, we're going to give you a half hour on network television to promote your event. What are we getting out of it? We're getting nothing. My point is, they could have gotten something. You could have littered that show with ads for UFC on Fox 4. I think it's UFC on Fox 4 is coming up. But you could have put ads all over for the August show.
You feed all the advertising to Fox. You go, okay, we're going to have these spots for UFC 4, but when it comes to the commercial breaks, you sell them. They're yours. I mean, some barter could have been worked out, which makes me wonder, though. I mean, but again, if you show them all this stuff, you go, it's a no-brainer to have it on. You'd get something out of it because you know you're going to suck people in if they saw it, which makes me think, I mean, the subject, obviously it was broached with them to put it on there, but nobody took it seriously because the fact that it ended up on FX at 2 o'clock in the morning, I mean, that's something, and no offense to them, that's a John Fitch, Johnny Hendricks, you know, pay-per-view event that would end up on FX at 2 o'clock in the morning, not Silva and Sonnen, which would have put eyeballs on FX at a better time and got people drawn into it. So it just, it is one of those things that has stuck out like a sore thumb of, you know, this didn't work all the way around, and I'm not blaming UFC because I can't believe they just passively let this go through. This was just Fox and FX not even considering it.
Well, it was on Fuel.
As well it should be.
I am now, I can officially announce that Fuel has now added one subscriber, that being me. I had them come in yesterday, and I am no longer a Comcast subscriber. The Verizon Fios has now been installed here, and as a result, I do in fact get Fuel Television for the first time. And lots of UFC on that channel, Mike.
You watch a whole lot of Best of Pride?
I haven't watched much of anything yet because I just got it installed. But when I turned it on yesterday, there was tons of UFC, and also there was a Best of Pride. There was a Mayweather fight on there, a replay of a Mayweather fight, and I presume, I don't think he was in, you know, jail having a brawl, although that would be hell of a pay per view. And I also have, believe it or not, a station called Black Belt TV.
And I've heard of this.
Yeah, I have it. And when I turned it on, they were playing a M1 Affliction marathon of M1 Affliction events from around the world. It was so wacky.
Was it everything overdubbed in English, or was it in native tongue, too?
Oh, they had English commentary. They had English commentary, but it was amazing to see M1 Affliction on my television. All right, we got a caller here on the line. You are on the air. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
This is Richard Sheely.
Richard, what's up?
Oh, how's it going, Brian?
How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. You guys still doing the Money in the Bank predictions?
Indeed we are. What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, unfortunately, I think John Cena is going to be taking the WWE title TLC match. It's kind of hard to predict because it's seems to be unclear what the main event's going to be for SummerSlam, so it's kind of hard to figure it out from there.
And how about the SmackDown side?
Off SmackDown, I could see them possibly giving it to Tyson Kidd. He's been getting that little push there, and the fans seem to be into it, and nobody else really sticks out in that match to me is taking it.
So if you put it on Tyson Kidd, let's say you're the booker here. If you put it on Tyson Kidd, who wins the main event, or who ends up with the SmackDown title that that Tyson Kidd eventually cashes it in on?
I could see them giving it to Alberto. They've been giving him that kind of mean streak lately, along with the fact that CM Punk and Sheamus have both had their belts for quite some time, at least since WrestleMania. And I think they're going to get an itchy finger and pull it off Sheamus, because I don't see them taking it off CM Punk tonight.
Really? I actually think Punk is the least likely to leave with the title tonight. Maybe not the least likely, but I think something's going to happen tonight.
I think we have to see a title change soon. This seems like the longest we've gone in forever without one of the two titles changing.
All right, I want to thank you very much for the call. We're actually heading up to a break. We'll be back in just a moment with more. We'll get Mike's thoughts as well. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are taking your phone calls on Money in the Bank and just flat-out open-line phone calls, whatever's on your mind. You can always find out when and where to call by following me on Twitter, at Brian Alvarez. We're going to be doing call-in shows here on Observer Live and Mondays and Fridays at WrestlingObserver.com as well on Figure Four Daily. And Mike, we just had a caller suggest that perhaps Tyson Kidd could leave with the Money in the Bank briefcase for the SmackDown side. What are your thoughts on that occurring?
I don't know what the Todd's odds would be, but I don't know, maybe plus 500 on Tyson Kidd. If he wins it, then all of these, you know, pseudo rumors about them possibly wanting to do, you know, focus on cruiserweights or do something with a first hour or do something with Full Sail, that's all been true. If that's going to be the case, and you know, it wouldn't hurt my feelings, although it doesn't really make any sense all the way around. I mean, I like Tyson Kidd. I want to see them use him in a effective way, but again, no offense to him, but you're going to hear, like, you know, the air come out of the balloon if Tyson Kidd is the one that goes ahead. I mean, even Jack Swagger was in a better position when he won his at Mania, so I don't, as great as in theory as it would be for him to have a shot at the title in his hands, the first thing I would be thinking if he won that thing tonight is, does he lose it on SmackDown on Friday, you know, putting it up in a challenge or something like that. I like him. I want him to do something with him. I would love if they did something and focused on smaller guys who, again, they don't have to do a bunch of flying moves and have the stereotype of what, you know, light heavyweight or cruiserweight wrestling is. Just have two guys with a story beating the crap out of each other. I think, you know, people will be okay with that and buy into that. So, again, I don't see how this is going to do any good for Tyson Kidd, even if he did win it.
All right, let's go back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Brian, this is the Dan Peck Show from Los Angeles, California, and the board.
How you doing, Dan Peck?
Hey. I'm doing okay. You know, I just wanted to say you do a great job on the site. I've been a member for about 2 years. Really like it. And Mike's a jam-up guy.
Mike is a jam-up guy.
Isn't he?
Sure is.
Mike, okay, so I got some Money in the Bank predictions I wanted to run by.
All right.
All right, so I think Cena's winning the briefcase for the WWE title match. And I think where they're going with that is probably he's facing Punk, maybe at the thousandth episode of Raw. Like I think they're doing a lot to hype that up, and I could see them maybe working the briefcase into that, like he'll announce tomorrow.
I can see them doing that, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that, you know, a title match would cap off, like they're really trying to make that 1,000th episode an event. And, I mean, or maybe they wait till SummerSlam, whatever, but I think Cena's taking the briefcase. And
all right.
I think for the other match, because I don't see any, like, real... I don't buy any of those guys. I know the world title is not the world title anymore, but, I mean, like, Tensai or, I mean, Santino? Like, I just don't see, I mean, I like Damian Sandow, but I could even see Big Show coming back out and maybe crushing everybody and winning that. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but I could see that just as well as I could see any other guys in that match actually taking it.
So you think that Cody or Dolph, unlikely?
I mean, yeah, I guess I would take Dolph over anybody else. But it's just, I mean, they have, I mean, if Dolph is a future world champion, they have done a very strange job of telling the audience that this guy should be taken as a potential top guy, because he just loses every week on television. I mean, I know Jack Swagger did too, and then they gave Jack Swagger the briefcase and he was champion later that week. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems like you guys talk about their inability to make new stars, and it feels like Dolph and Cody, and just how, you know, they've been running in place for 2 years now. You know, it just, if they're a top guy, you know, I'd love to see it start tonight. I'd love to see Dolph Ziggler look great tonight and, you know, then cash in and win the title clean and be seen as a guy everyone should take seriously. I just don't think it's going to happen.
And you know what? I have more confidence in them doing that with Dolph than I do with Cody, because even though they've done the same things, which is beat these guys kind of often, you know, I thought if Cody loses the Intercontinental title leading into this, you know, that, okay, something's going to happen. And, you know, he ends up losing it, and it's just like, okay, But still, I would go with Dolph over Cody right now. I mean, again, I'd like to see Cody make a big impact, because they have forgotten about him so much, but people aren't used to seeing him lose, or he's on the forefront of that, whereas Dolph Ziggler, I mean, he's like the shining light of, again, being a Super Bowl who bounces around and loses and, you know, in every big opportunity that he gets.
And Del Rio, the Del Rio Sheamus thing is so stale to me that I could even see, and I know it kind of contradicts what I was just talking about, I could even see the winner of that match beating Sheamus tonight. Like, I could see, you know, Del Rio losing and then laying out Sheamus, and then, you know, Cody Rhodes or Dolph Ziggler or Damian Sandow even, or Tensai, you know, one of the heels who wins that world title briefcase. I could see them beating Sheamus tonight to set up something for SummerSlam, where we should maybe be taking Dolph or Cody a little more seriously. And then for Punk, AJ, and Daniel Bryan, you know, I'd like to see them do, you know, 30 or 40 minutes, you know, a really, really good match. AJ, you know, kind of just calling it down the middle, or obviously not wanting to see either guy get hurt too badly. And then, you know, the finish I think would make a little sense is you have Punk put the Anaconda Vice on, and it's obvious that AJ has feelings for Daniel Bryan. So, you know, Daniel Bryan won't tap out. He passes out in the move, and AJ stops the match. And Punk leaves with the title, but AJ stays, and she's obviously, you know, still... She still has feelings for Daniel Bryan, so she stays and she's angry at Punk for, you know, doing what he had to do to win the match. But Punk leaves with the title, which is really what he cares about as the top guy.
Well, I want to thank you very much for that. And Mike, I want to ask you about the Cena possibility that he brought up there. Cena winning the briefcase and then cashing it in on Raw next week. I like the idea for two reasons. Number one, if you're going to put the title on Cena, you have to do the deal where he's a stand-up guy and he announces when he's going to get his championship match. And the only problem with it to me is that we've got Raw 1000 next week. And I don't know. I realize it's a big show and it makes sense, but I don't know what kind of promo Cena cuts where he's like, I'm going to stand up and announce when I'm going to get my championship match. I want it next week. Like, he doesn't have any problem with Punk. He doesn't have any problem with Daniel Bryan. Why is he in such a hurry? That part of it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I think Daniel Bryan would be the guy. In that scenario, if he beats anybody out of any of the four possibilities coming out of tonight, Daniel Bryan would be the one that makes the most sense.
All right, let's go back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? Apparently he hung up. You intimidated him, Mike.
Well, as I should have.
Tomorrow is Raw 999, everybody. The final... I can't even believe I'm going to say this. I had to take a deep breath. The final two-hour Raw before we have to watch this show for 3 hours every week. I'm not ready for this.
You mean it's the final Todd Martin Raw review?
That's right. It is the final Todd Martin Raw report is tomorrow night. And I don't think we have a replacement yet.
I don't think... You know... We may not get one. I mean, this is a lot of time to be investing into a show that is tough. Oftentimes, at 2 hours, probably going to be, you know, filled with lots and lots of filler. That this is going to be for a lot of wrestling fans. I don't know about the average Raw viewer, but certainly for the wrestling fan portions that are still around, this is going to be a show you watch on the DVR in a couple days. You watch it over the span of time, maybe an hour here, the other 2 hours there. Maybe you wait for Universal HD to show it on Saturday. I don't think, unless something really pops, and you know the thousands raw, is going to be good, but it's going to be, you know, 1001, 1002. When it gets to those, are people just going to start tuning out if they're not filling this thing up with something good? And it's not, I'm not feeling confident about that possibility.
No, I think the first 1000th raw is going to be interesting. I don't know if I can say it's going to be good, because they've got so much stuff planned and so many names. I just pictured being, like, completely rushed, even with 3 hours. Well, 3 hours and 15 minutes, because I got the overrun. Which, by the way, would mean that your average 3-hour Raw is going to be about a half hour longer than your average pay-per-view. Think about that. So, I think the first one's going to be exciting, maybe. Interesting, at least. Good? I guess we'll have to see. Just going to... I think we're going to see a lot of short matches and a lot of segments. After that, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to get every single week for 3 hours. At this point, it's not going to be a one-hour lead-in like they're doing with Impact and then the two-hour regular show. It's going to be 3 hours. What we get for 2 hours, they're going to try to expand to three. And maybe that will mean, I mean, surely it will mean some longer matches. Some of these segments that seem too long now are going to seem even longer, and I don't think it's sustainable over the long haul. I could be wrong, but I would expect by early 2013, we're back to two-hour Raws again. I don't know how they're going to explain that. Maybe they'll say the first hour is moving to the network. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do, but this is unsustainable to me.
It could even be the end of summer. I mean, it could be football season starting. And they can make the decision, and again, somehow figure out some sort of way to weasel out of it or backtalk out of it of why we knew it was never going to work in the first place, but we had to give it the old shot type of deal. Again, they just, as good as they are with the video packages, we wonder why there's so many of them on the pay-per-view. So again, what are you going to make people pay for when it comes to 3 hours, that one Sunday a month? Where they're seeing the exact same video packages, the exact same this, the exact same that, it could do a little more damage that way. I mean, look how many people wait and see what's going to happen on Monday night anyway. Again, they definitely need to step it up all the way around. And my confidence right now, again, is not great, although, boy, they have a lot of talent sitting there and a lot of talent, you know, that's not even there yet that's working its way up.
I don't know if anything's changed, but at last report, Charlie Sheen has quit Twitter, which means that WWE's social media ambassador for Raw 1000 will not, in fact, be tweeting. What a devastating move that was by Charlie Sheen to screw WWE like that.
I'm sure he was high on his priority list of thinking about, you know, what he was going to be doing for WWE.
Hmm.
I mean, it's a publicist fail. Did Charlie Sheen ever actually even know he was going to be doing something for WWE?
I think he did, because the word is that while he did not actually send the tweets, he had a guy, his tweet master, that he told him what to tweet.
So it's like the guy for the Iron Sheik then?
Basically, yes.
Okay, the manager guy.
Sure. So theoretically, he would have actually been watching Raw and just, drinking and you know, telling his tweet master his thoughts on this show, which he would then have to, I'm sure, PG down.
Yeah, I was going to say now, because I can imagine when the women came on and Charlie possibly maybe seeing them at the Playboy Mansion before or something like that on a PG show. Yeah, I don't know if they worked this one out in the most intelligent fashion. I mean, better than Perez Hilton? Maybe. But there probably was somebody more effective to touch both audiences than Charlie Sheen.
By the way, what are your thoughts on former WWE champion Big Dave Batista at 43 years old getting ready for his first ever mixed martial arts fight?
You know, as someone that watched a lot of Pride and things like that in Japan, all for it. I love the fact that he's fighting Rashid Evans, which I think of the stories of the old AWA Boston promoter that would have these, you know, fake wrestlers that would come to try to confuse people. And I'm hoping, like, you know, Roy Belson and, you know, Rampage Johnson or somebody like that comes next in Big Dave's career.
He is training. This is no gimmick. He got his blue belt in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. He's been training stand-up for several years. He's been doing Filipino martial arts for most of his life. And he's bringing in a couple of guys, including Rich Franklin, to help train with him. So he's serious about this. And
this is from D.C. I wonder if he ever went to Junri Karate.
I don't know. We're going to be back in just a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208. And streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We also do daily radio shows for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. And tomorrow on Figure 4 Daily, we're going to be taking calls. It's going to be around 11:30 a.m. Pacific, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. If you want to find out exactly when, where, etc. to call in, follow me on Twitter. At Brian Alvarez is the Twitter handle. I will always alert you when it's time to call in and give you the link to the phone numbers. If you'd like to put the phone numbers into your phone, I will read them out on the air tomorrow as well. So today, Money in the Bank, it's coming up immediately after we go off the air. We got world title matches, WWE title matches, and world and WWE title Money in the Bank matches. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com, all of the results of all of the matches throughout the evening. If you don't order the pay-per-view, and if you order the pay-per-view and would like Dave's thoughts, that is the place to go. And then later on this evening, Dave and I are going to be back, only for subscribers, a brand new radio show at WrestlingObserver.com, talking all of the results from the evening, all of the matches, who cashed in, and Mike, before we go, I'm putting you on the spot, you got 30 seconds. When the show is over, who will be the WWE and World Champions after all is said and done?
Oh, man. I will go with... Sheamus. And CM Punk.
Sheamus and CM Punk. There you go, everybody. I'm going to find out if Mike is correct. Next week, we're probably not going to have a new show. Very quickly, I'm heading out into the Cascades for 3 days to hunt Bigfoot. Not hunt. I'm not going to try and shoot him. But the Bigfoot Field Research Organization is doing an expedition to find Bigfoot, and I'm going. So I will not be back in time to do the show next week. But in 2 weeks, we'll be back after Raw 1000, and hopefully I'll be back. I guess we'll find out. Talk to you soon, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.